hope we're tuned well enough together that as we stop talking and just start settling down, you can feel the transition from the mundane to the sacred. No dispute. This can't be argued. It's only argued by people who don't have access. Once the access is discovered, words don't, you don't even have to. Now, we talked a lot about identity shifting yesterday, and I'll continue that theme throughout the weekend. But I want to caution, a couple of years ago, I was doing leading a month-long retreat with Narayan at the Forest Refuge in Barrie, and we had people who were coming knowing the subject, which was awakening. And so they were prepared to meet that subject, and many people had read our books and et cetera. And what happened was something Narayan and I found unexpected, and that was that my assumption was that we would all just kind of move forward in that subject and deepen our understanding within it. But very quickly within that retreat, people, psychological difficulties started to arise, and self-assumptions that they have lived with their whole life started to encapsulate their retreat. And I couldn't quite understand it because we weren't pointing in that direction. Not that it isn't an important direction to point, but. And I realized that the subject matter itself gave rise to this shadowy influence that we carry, and that it was the egoic need to reassert its self-control through the most difficult areas of ourself, that it was regrounding itself within its own self-difficulty as a way to defend itself against what it might fear was a transcendence out of itself. Does that make sense? So it gave me a deeper and more rich understanding of how much interference the mind creates to move in the direction that our heart yearns. And so it's with that caution, I just want to say that so that if your mind's kicking up, which it will at some point if it's not this weekend, it's inevitable that it kicks up until it's sufficiently understood so that it stops kicking. But that sometimes just approaching a subject of the dimension that we're moving towards stirs that conflict. And I think Narayan and I taught that retreat well in the fact that we would move with the student and where they were rather than where we wanted them to perceive, you know, where we were pointing. And so to bring one's attention to that stirring, that struggle that many of us maintain is what needs to be done. You don't need to bypass that or to repress it in order to move forward. Everything needs to be awakened through itself, not in spite of or in opposition to. Everything is of the same essence. And if you leave something out, by our bypassing it, it'll come back and haunt you. It's not going away. And the belief systems that we've invested in it will continue to plague your journey until we are willing to turn back towards it. And okay, come what may, let me explore this too. Now, the problem is that some of these self-assumptions hold our life, our life's belief. This isn't a belief about, you know, superficial matters. I believe in God, or I believe in this, or I believe, you know. This is the deepest belief systems that we have about ourselves. If we were up against the gun, and the person said, tell me what you really believe, this is what would come out of our mouth. This is how exacting the Dharma is. It will eventually take us to that, the place that we fear to go, the most feared place within us. And why is it feared? It's because we really believe that this is, that I'm unworthy, or whatever your or my particular system holds. Mine was, something's wrong with me. And so everything that happened in the course of my life that turned a little bit off, it was of course my fault because there's something wrong with me. And that's maintained and reinvested because of the evidence that things are not always going the way I wanted them to go. That's the only evidence that I need to reaffirm the fact that there's something wrong with me. And so over a number of years, that builds into a pretty strong assumption. And so we have to take that on. We have to be willing, because if you take your whatever assumption you have, if you can narrow it down to a sentence, you can usually find it within a sentence or a phrase, and then start looking from that phrase as to how that phrase has controlled your life, and you'll see it controls everything. It's the assumption that's been out there our entire life that we don't see because we believe it to be true. It's like we don't, it's so obvious to us that we just assume it's the reality. That's how true we take it to be. And so we can't see reality because it's covered in this opaque filter of self-concern. Okay, I just want to mention that to you. We're not going to get out of anything here. Okay? Sometimes we get, you know, the highs of spirituality are where we love to play, and the fields of oneness is wonderful, and universal conscious, just take me out there. Why do we want to be taken out there so that we don't have to deal with the beliefs that we have here? This is an in-the-body experience. That's just a mature way of looking at it. You don't, okay, let's bring it on, that's it. Now, I could spend a whole weekend talking about how to work with that, but I don't want to, that's not where this one's going this day. But I wanted to, that if you had nightmares, or you had disturbing sleep, or you woke up and you felt kind of disgruntled, or if you just don't feel on top of yourself today, you know, just look and see what's down there, what's being uncovered. What's showing itself? And as we quiet, that too will be known as the sacred. That too reveals itself within that single essence. So I want to move on a little bit more in the theme of the retreat and talk about how the sense of I evolves, and then how that's important, the evolution of ourselves as separate people is essential for us to be able to function and navigate in the world. It's not a mistake. It has to happen. We have to grow functionally as separation, as separate. And many of us feel like, you know, the newborn child has that consciousness like it's merged. It's not differentiated. It's merged. But a merged consciousness on its own is not where we're going. Because a merged consciousness is whatever the consciousness is. If it's anger, it's anger. If it's blah, it's blah. It has no ability to differentiate. And so as the child, and this is crucial because whatever the child is doing, at some point we have to undo. So it's important to know how this thing is doing itself, making itself into an individualistic, in order so that we can backtrack on that very thing, which I will explain in just a moment. So as the mind, which is an amazing, amazing organ, but as it starts, as the merged consciousness starts learning, mom, dad, whatever, it starts differentiating. And along with that differentiation, it knows it's not the mother, that the mother is outside of it. And then the mother, the things that are outside of it, start picking up a history through memory, start picking up a story associated with that object, and whether it's I'm well cared for and comfortable within the embrace of that object or not. And then the emotions that are associated with the learning and the memory also become part of that conscious differentiation. And so a little later in the child's life, when it sees mother or father or dog, it has a readied approach or avoidance and a already growing history in regard to that object. And then it knows to avoid or not, to welcome or not, whatever it is that's arising within its consciousness, and that provides safety. Right? So it's no longer merged within everything, it's differentiating now, which is extraordinarily important, because how are you going to know how to get out of a door if you can't differentiate yourself from that opening? Functionality, knowledge is essential, right? So we're not trying, and this is important, we're not trying to get rid of our knowledge base. We're not trying to get rid of the sense of differentiation. Now what happens is something that is not a part of our health, and that is the differentiation just keeps going far beyond, it draws its own conclusions from its own history. It stops, in some ways, learning about the world as it was when it was very young, in a new and open way, to a conclusive way. And then it starts assuming and generalizing out of that, out of the products and people that it has known, that you dress like my mother, so you must, that it all gets blurred in there, but it makes complete sense to the inward logic of its own differentiation. It makes no sense to anyone listening to it. And so we're the base of the knowledge that we have of the world, we start generating a whole self view about myself in the world. And this is where it gets really crazy, Because it's no longer just a differentiation of self and other, it becomes a thing itself that has its own life, that has its own conclusions about its life, its own history, and its own assumptions about what it can and cannot do. That wasn't part of the plan. That's a wrench in the machine, right? That's the part that's unhealthy, not the differentiation. And as that grows in self, as we grow in self-importance and we try to embellish where we feel disadvantaged by leaning towards those parts of us that can be built up so that we have some sense of self-aggrandizement. I'm better than this, I'm not as good at that, but I'm better than you at most things, and all of that. So it becomes very clear in each of our eyes where we fit in the world of other objects that are similar to ourselves. And then the tensions associated with that, the struggles associated with that become, you can't maintain. Some people do by deflecting their hurt and pain back onto the world, but that's not very successful because the pain takes them into darker and more shadowy regions of themselves. And then this sense of anxiety about life, just living, there's an anxiety. Many people have just living. We keep looking for why we're anxious. We're anxious because living itself has been a struggle. And so anxiety itself about living, waking up, I mean from sleep, has its own anxiety. So it can get so crazy that it becomes psychopathic, you know, it becomes anything. It becomes anything with the rationalization within itself of perfect making sense of what it's doing, usually. Sometimes that's gone too. And then we become psychotic. All right, so somewhere along the line between neurotic and psychotic, all of us lie. And so, but that's sufficient pain to bring you here. It's sufficient struggle that brought you here. So you see that even though the whole thing went helter-skelter at some point internally, it was necessary, it was a necessary threshold to bring you here. If you never had reached that threshold of struggle, you just kind of struggle through life at, you know, I can handle this. It's awful, but I can handle this. But at some point, there must be something else besides this struggle. And that is why we come to the Dharma. Now the Dharma brings forth a different set of circumstances and issues. Here's the key, and this is so, we still use differentiation and Dharma to undo ourselves. It sounds like differentiation can only further differentiate, but no, we can actually use differentiation to come back to sanity of what we really are as opposed to what we think we are. Now, how does that work? Well, it works through the device of witness, of awareness, of seeing ourselves. That's differentiation. That's, we still feel the owner of our awareness, which for a while is fine, and we're looking at our minds and seeing what the mind is doing. And that awareness that sees what the mind is doing is also in that moment aware that it's not, the awareness is not it. That it's not identified with what it sees in the same way it was when it was acting out from those emotions and thoughts. And so that differentiation now is bringing bringing a clarity as to what is mind, and what is this differentiation, really. So for a while, the mind takes precedent, and we want to figure out enough so that we have some easier life living with a mind. We're not so interested in differentiation. Differentiation supports us understanding what the mind is through awareness of that organ. At some point, the mind is sufficiently understood. For most people, it's not a completed story. And where I feel comfortable, it's not like that. It's like I'm still struggling. But I'm struggling now to the point where I realize that even this differentiation is increasing the tension. That differentiation isn't solving anything. The witnessing, the me who's seeing, feels problematic at some point. Because there's still two things. It's still separated. And so, at that point, the awareness begins to look at the subtlety of that continued differentiation. Guess what it finds? It finds that subtlety of differentiation that thought it was the owner of awareness is actually part of the mind. It's quiet chatter of the mind that we have been so identified with. It's so subtle that we just assumed it to be me. It's the me that has escaped the mind so that I can see the mind from its vantage point. I find this interesting. If I do. So, now, this subtle sense of oneself, the awareness, quiet sufficiently, so now that it becomes encased, because it's still the mind, but now we're freeing the mind from a placeholder, from something that's seeing. Because we're not trying to fix anything now. We want to understand it. We have a different kind of curiosity. As long as you're trying to fix something, that's still a struggle. I got to get over this thing called mind. I've got to get over my emotional. And so that tension creates the sense of me being separate from the thing I'm trying to fix. But now I've come to an understanding of the mind sufficiently that emotions are just emotions. And thoughts are, I mean, it's not something to fix. It's something to be accountable for, as I mentioned yesterday, but it's not something to fix. And with that comes the decreased struggle. And with decreased struggle, the awareness is no longer trying to fix. It's the curiosity intrinsic in awareness. Awareness is, right? Okay, so now it turns on itself. What's this? What is this? What is this thing? It does it with a smile, not a sternness. And suddenly the awareness becomes 360. It's not pointed by anything that's trying to solve a problem. Awareness was always 360. We held it as a 90 lateral movement because we were trying to get over ourselves. But now we're not trying to get over ourselves, and now it becomes universal. And that moment in which awareness is seen, even instantaneously or momentarily or for 5 minutes or for a duration of a meditation, doesn't matter, suddenly you recognize awareness for what it really is. Freestanding. That you're being seen. Always. It's not like awareness only sees you. It sees everything. There's nothing special about you. But it sees. Its nature is to see. And it doesn't have a vantage point. It doesn't have a location. And you, oh, wow, I'm being seen. Now this is beautiful. Oh, this is a real shift of identity when it happens. I mean, it happens usually many times before there's actually a shift of identity. And many times, so, but it's beautiful when it, even for a momentary glance or feeling that's, you know, that you're not responsible for your attention, you can struggle your way out of that knowledge that attention is seeing you by just having any struggle, internal or just a conflict or any self-promoted problem will take you away from the acknowledgement that you're being seen. That's the way it works. We're here to clear up struggle. And but when struggle is sufficiently clear, there is a shift of identity out of oneself. This is not neurotic. This is not psychotic. This is not disassociation. This is not really the mind splitting. This has nothing to do with the mind at all. That's for emphasis. Because it's not splitting anything. In fact, it's healing this thing, which is no longer in conflict with itself. When it's in conflict with itself, the seeing can't get in, because one part of the mind is in dispute with the other, and that tension creates the optical illusion of the process of me having a problem. That's what it's all the mirrors and the reflection of the mirrors, that's what it, okay? So when that briefly ends, and all it takes is a moment, a brief moment, that's at rest, and seeing is. There's one of my favorite Buddhist, I mean, I am not a scholar by any stretch of imagination, but there are certain Buddhist stories that go, yeah, that one gets it. So this guy comes up to the Buddha and says, what's the locus? He didn't say locus, but that's what he meant. What's the locus of the senses? That's where does the senses all come under, where do all the senses merge? And the Buddha said, the brain. So yeah, that makes sense. He says, what's the locus of the brain? The mind. Buddha said, awareness. The entire mind can be seen from awareness. And then the man said, what's the locus of awareness? And the Buddha said, the infinite. The infinite. You see, neurologists can stimulate all parts of the brain and have you recount memories or emotions or, I mean, there are, you know, all the brain is being pretty well understood, and you can electrically stimulate those parts and have the experiences of your life within it. It's all held in there somewhere. The one thing that one cannot stimulate from an electrical impulse to the brain is awareness, because awareness isn't held within the mental fabric of the brain. It's universal. And the Buddha said, because there is the unconditioned awareness, you can escape from the conditioned mind. There is a way out. If it were just another conditioned component, then it couldn't free itself from conditioning because it too would be conditioned, but it's not conditioned. And therefore reveals all conditioning. And now you can be seen. But you have to want to be seen, because it's full exposure. And that's where your self-assumptions, like, not that part. Not the part that feels unworthy. back to the condensation. And people, you know, they labor through themselves when all they have to do is be seen. Whatever mechanism works, see it. See it. Whatever is holding you back, just look. It doesn't have to be universal. It can be personal. Just use whatever expression of awareness is there to see as well as you can. It doesn't have to be perfect. It can be opinionated. Just see those two. Seeing takes you out of the conditions. Because whatever is being, however you are seeing, whatever opinions or conditions you're seeing within can also be seen because it's not conditioned. But you have to want to see it. And that's why it only moves as fast as our heart's yearning. And I can see this too. You have to want it more than you're afraid of it. That's basically that's the equation. That's the equation. And there's a point when, as I mentioned yesterday, when you will, if you haven't already. And you'll still be walking down the street where you don't think there's any obstacles at all, and you'll trip or you're hit up against a wall that you didn't see, or you'll trip over some, fall down a ledge. I mean, there are lots of areas of the unconscious mind that are not going to remain unconscious when you're dedicating your life to being conscious. Those are going to spring forth. Not just the personal unconscious, but the common unconscious. What did Jung call it? The
collective
unconscious. And as one grows into the collective, magic starts. I mean, you got to love the mystery because, whoa, it's a lot in there. But it's all of one essence, you see. It's a single essence. And our job now is to, oh gosh, one thing about getting old is that words just don't. People were trying to make lead into gold, what were those people called?
Alchemists.
you're my vocabulary. Okay, so you see, now I forgot what I was going to say about it. I was going to relate it.
Our work now is to be alchemists.
You won't say more? I think you're on to something. Oh, okay, yes. Okay, I'm back. So, everything is of one essence, but the mind doesn't see it as one essence. And so we have to, alchemist, what does an alchemist do? It changes? Whatever it does, it
transforms.
Thank you. Transforms what the mind says something is back to that one essence. That's our job. So how do we do that when everything looks so full of itself? We have to understand where that fullness of self comes from. It's not coming from out there. It's coming from in here. It's coming from my memory experience of you. It's coming from what I have trained, how I have trained the mind to perceive. Through my fears, desires, through my sense of perception of me being in here, I of course perceive you out there. So to come back to one essence, I have to challenge that basic transference of information. But since it's coming from the mind, it can be seen too. Now this is an important point. I don't know why I'm picking on neurologists this weekend, but I'm not picking on them, I'm using their science. But they tell us that the pathway of perception is the same pathway as recognition. So we don't know when we see whether we're seeing something as it is or we are seeing from the recognizable forms that we have learned in our past. Are we seeing the past or are we seeing the present? See, this is very interesting. When you look out, if you see objects that are meaningful and you know them and have shape and mean something to you, you're seeing from the past. You're looking out and seeing from the past. So we bring the past into the present and claim reference for ourselves now through what we acknowledge is in the now. And all of the memories associated with those objects. But that's the past. That's what has been. That's the memory. That's the recognition factor. That's not the perceptual factor. Now you say, what do I do? I'm lost. It's the same neurological pathway. How could I possibly separate? Because awareness, which is not conditioned pathway, can see the difference. If you want it. Now, it's a huge wanting it, because why would I want to give up everything I know and my secure place within it? Because if I give that up, the knowledge base that holds the sense of me is also being released at the same time. And I'm dependent upon recognition for my sense of me, of my image, of who I am. And the story that I have associated with myself, because I have a recognition factor around me as well. So why would we move into this, you see? Well, some of us won't. We don't want to go that way. But the more stability and maturity you have under your feet, the more you want to know what's true, not what's useful. But it takes an extraordinary degree of stability. And so that's almost paradoxical to the fact that I'm uprooting myself within these questions I'm asking. So this stability is not coming from the sense of knowledge that we have about ourselves. It's coming from something else. I don't know where it's coming from, but it's there. Rock solid. And what drives, what moves out of that stability is curiosity and a resolve to know what is true. Not a New Year's resolution, but a yearning to know what is really true, not what is, you know, relatively appropriate. But we also want to know what's relatively appropriate, because I don't want to say things that will create difficulty for you. So relatively appropriate is also something that is helpful. You don't want to become more crude and less, more dismissive as we take part, as we secede from ourselves. Because at the same time, see, it's all very, it sounds like it's complex, but it's so goddamn simple. But to talk about it, it's like, and this, and that, and neurological pathways, and like you go, what? I don't even under, what, I don't see, just shut up, you know? It's like, so as oneself diminishes naturally, not through force of will, because that's, as we talked about yesterday, that's just compensation and further self-growth, egoic growth. The heart, through no efforts of our own, the heart grows proportionally to our diminishment. And as it grows, it cares. It's the saving grace of everything. It cares. It doesn't want to hurt. It doesn't want, it wants to know the social etiquettes so that it fits comfortably without coarseness. You know, and so it cares, but it's willing to learn into that caring, kindness. And this is an interesting, but not at the sake of truth. It's not that you force truth upon people, it's that you wait for the timing of their receptivity to offer that truth. So it's, again, it's not a ball bat that you hit people over the head with, but you never give up the yearning to impart truth. And the heart feeds that yearning through caring and augments that blunt sword of truth with appropriateness. Is all this making some sense? Okay. So those two grow hand in hand. And so learning never stops, because new situations and ways to accommodate or what needs to happen are always, it's forever. Awakening is forever. It's infinitely forever. It's infinite and forever. So to say I've arrived is just nonsense. Well, ask for your money back. Well, I seem to have lost the thread of my thinking, so I'm going to stop here. I'll pick it back up, I'm sure. I just don't know when it comes. I don't know when it leaves, and I don't know how it comes back. But I have some degree of faith that it will. Okay.